This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is set to speak to the nation this evening in a primetime address from the Oval Office. He's expected to announce an incremental withdrawal of 30,000 U.S. forces from Iraq to be completed next summer. The troop reduction will put American forces back at pre-surge levels, with 130,000 personnel remaining in the country. Most Democrats are not satisfied with the president's decision. Democratic Senator Carl Levin, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, says the announcement, quote, creates and provides an illusion of change. A roadside bomb killed a key Sunni sheikh who had joined the U.S. to work against al-Qaeda. His death is seen as a serious setback in the efforts to stabilize Anbar province by bringing tribal leaders together. However, local leaders vowed to continue working against al-Qaeda. A U.S. military spokesman says an Iranian-made rocket was believed to have been used to attack American military headquarters in Iraq this week, killing one person. The revelation comes as U.S. officials step up their accusations that Tehran is supplying Iraqi Shiite militias with weapons. A suicide bombing at a military canteen in Islamabad killed at least 15 Pakistani soldiers today. It's the second such attack in this month. Officials blamed al-Qaeda. Saudi Arabia may skip an upcoming Middle East peace conference called by the U.S. Saudi leaders say unless it addresses the Palestinian refugee situation, they will not attend. Two additional strong earthquakes hit the Indonesian island of Sumatra a day after yesterday's powerful 8.4 magnitude quake killed at least a dozen people. The United Nations has voted to adopt a non-binding declaration recognizing the rights of indigenous people. The declaration upholds their human rights as well as their right to self-determination and to have their treaties enforced. Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the U.S. were the only four nations to vote against it. A day after he announced his resignation, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was hospitalized. He's said to be suffering from stress and exhaustion. Former Governor of Virginia, Democrat Mark Warner, today announced that next year he will run for U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Republican Senator John Warner. The two are not related. Along parts of the Texas and Louisiana coast, Tropical Storm Umberto caused flooding and at least one fatality. You're listening to QNN.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light." This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Researchers at Tokyo University say they've engineered salmon that produce baby trout. Scientists injected newly hatched sterile salmon with sperm-growing cells from the trout, and the salmon grew up to reproduce trout. The groundbreaking conservation procedure will be published in tomorrow's journal Science. Several environmental conservation groups released a list today of the worst polluted places in the world. In the second annual compilation, China, India, and Russia each have two locations in the top 10. Google says it will pay around $30 million to any private company that can land a robotic rover on the moon and send video back to Earth. The contest expires at the end of 2014. Bank of America has increased the amount of money it charges on non-customers to use the bank's ATMs. The $3 charge is the highest such fee in the nation. Concerns about Countrywide eased today as the home loan giant secured $12 billion in credit. For the second day in a row, the dollar hit a new low in trading against the euro. Gold is trading at $717.90 an ounce. Light sweet crude oil is currently at $80.09 a barrel. The Dow ended up 133 points at 13,424. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Strictly Confidential. Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book Chapter and Verse 40 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Many of you are listening via podcast. However, if you are listening to the main network stream on the evening of Thursday, September 13, you are indeed listening to a live show. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you'll find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. I point that out because we have a number of new listeners this evening who are interested in our guest, Ernest Cole, who is an amazing character. I'll be telling you more about him. We have others that you may be interested in the archives on. We have an archive of Cynthia Manley. She was on in July. We have Matt Gold, who's a singer-songwriter. He was on in August. And also the world's most fabulous DJ, Glenn Rivera, was a guest in June. The site also contains a link to our chat room, which is currently active and running. Again, that's strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Yes, I'm going to get it together tonight. I promise you I shall. The site also provides you with links to all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for the Strictly Confidential MySpace page. And there are links to locate the music you hear on the show. The call-in lines are 877, the number 4, head-on. That is a toll-free line. That's 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates to being 877-443-2366. If you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, use that, please, and you'll save the studio a nickel or a dollar. And that's area code 304-658-3333. It rings in West Virginia, and I will be giving you those numbers again a bit later in the program when we open the lines. If you have never had a chance to speak with Ernest, this is a golden opportunity to do so, and you'll be able to do that via phone in after we've introduced our Ernest to the program. The email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. Ernest Cole, wow, a recording artist, a multi-talented performer. And I have to stop and say something about multi-talented. You know, over the years, we get to the point where when we see the word multi-talented, when it comes to an entertainer or performer, our eyes just sort of glaze over or our ears sort of go numb. It's sort of a standard catchphrase. But I assure you, by the end of this program, you will understand what we mean by multi-talented. The man is amazing. He is a force in the music industry. He has a huge body of international hits, 17 consecutive top 10 smash singles. Six of those soared to the number one position in Dance Music Authority, Billboard, Street Sounds, Dance Music Reports, Top 50 Charts, and Dance Radio Charts. It is no wonder that Cole has received Dance Music Authority's Best Male Vocalist Award in 1990, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96. Yes, I am quite serious. He's also been nominated for Best Producer and Arranger, among other honors. Ernest Cole has established himself as an accomplished producer, a musical arranger, a writer, a choreographer, a chairman of his own independent production company. Amazing. So let's start the interview with Ernest by listening to his track, Only You. This is the United Kingdom Extended Club Mix. Thank you. And without further ado, I welcome Ernest Cole to Strictly Confidential. Welcome, Ernest.
Hey, how are you, Peter?
Ernest, you have tripped me out, dude. I've got to tell you, I called Glenn Rivera last night after the show was over. I needed to find out a little bit more about you, and I was going to do some research, you know, today. I'm time driven, you know, it's last minute driven. That's pretty much the way it runs around here. And after talking to Glenn last night, and after reading all the material, you know, Ernest, when you Google your name, at least the first 300 entries in Google are all you. first of all, it wasn't like with some guests I have to search and search to find. There was too much information. Oh, it's just amazing. By the way, folks, his site is ErnestCole.com. That's E-R-N-E-S-T, Cole, K-O-H-L. .com. We've been posting that link in the chat room, and so some of the folks in the chat room have already been by your site. They're already calling you good-looking and intelligent, and they hadn't even heard a word from you yet. I need to let you know.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Well, it's absolutely true. I need to tell you also that the a large number of our listeners are straight folks. We have both GLBT folks and straight folks. Not that that would change anything, but I thought you would like to know that we inherit a large number of straight folks from the show that precedes this, which is Bob Kincaid's show. And of course, they're all progressive and you know, love us to death. We love them back. And I know you perform before both crowds. But tell us about Only You. What a great song that is.
Oh, Only You is one of my favorites in my collection. It was originally done on my Importance of Being album, which was released on Unitas Records in 1999, and was released here in the States on Capitol Ichabod Records and went to number one. And then my late manager partner, who I lost to a massive heart attack of 14 and a half years, suggested I redo it to bring the song back because we had so many requests for it. And at first, I didn't really want to do it. I wanted to do the current single, To Save the Love. And he was very strong about the idea, and we went forward with it. I agreed if I would do Only You again, he would allow me to do To Save the Love and do a new production on that. So that was kind of a partnership deal that we made. Well, we went ahead and did Only You, and the success was phenomenal worldwide, and I still perform it to this very day.
Well, Ernest, I have to bring up, when you say that you lost Brian, you're saying you lost a lot more than that.
I lost my life with Brian. I'll try to brief this out. Brian Scott Harper was my husband. He was my manager. He was my best friend. He was everything in my existence. From the day I met him to the day I found him, he died. I just went to the grocery store, and he was cooking dinner. He was making his famous stuffed peppers, and he sent me it was very weird the way this happened. He made me go to the store. As I said, we were going to watch reruns of Desperate Housewives and that home makeover show with that Thai guy that's on ABC.
Yes, Sunday evenings. What is it called? Desperate Housewives.
I should know this because I do a lot of design work. Extreme Home Makeover. Okay,
That's it.
And we had been on tour the first 6 months previous, so a lot of the times we would be traveling on Sunday evenings and we would miss the episodes of Desperate Housewives. And it is somewhat of a soap opera, and, you know, if you miss this, one of the episodes, you kind of, like, are missing out on the storyline. So we wanted to catch up on what was going on before we went into the new season. And this was in August of 2005. So as I stated, he was making his famous stuffed peppers for dinner, which was one of his flawless recipes, and was really like going, saying, go to the store now, Ernest, get the coffee filters and coffee beans for the morning, because I know you're going to, you know, eat dinner and then lay on the couch, and you're going to go to bed, and that'll be it, you'll be in for the night, you're just going to get up and go to the gym in the morning, work with the trainer. And I was like, I don't want to go to the store. And now he's like, go. And I was like, okay, fine. Threw my jeans on, went to the store, came back, found him dead on the floor of a massive heart attack instantly.
Well, Ernest, no. I have to say to you, just to share a similar experience, I lost a partner, too, that was also deeply intertwined with music. He passed away, and that being the case, it was a terrible thing because so much seemed to be lost at that time. Not only a friend and a partner and lover, but a co-worker and someone you shared some. And music is so powerful. You shared that together, did you not?
Yes, everything. We shared everything together for 14 and a half years, which is a pretty long time. It's like double common law. It is definitely longer than a lot of my straight friends have been married. Some of my straight friends actually have gotten married, had kids, divorced, and have remarried and have another child by now in the period that Brian and I were together. It's a very, very sad situation. I'm kind of very broken about it. I'm nowhere near over it. I'm dedicating my brand new album that I'm currently recording right now to him, as I've dedicated the first two singles off of it to Save the Love 207 and Live Like You Were Dying to him in memorial tribute. I feel that's the least I could do. I missed him terribly. The loss of him is the greatest thing that has ever, ever happened to me in my whole existence. And I'm just trying to go on, but the one thing that does keep me going is the music. The music does keep me alive, but I hear him in the music.
That's what happened to me.
So you can comprehend what I'm saying.
God, Ernest, it was years before I could listen to it again. You apparently, because of your support group, you were able to continue, but I couldn't listen to any of the music that we were DJs together. I couldn't listen to. I shut down musically for a number of years.
Songs. I will be honest with you. I'm recording one of his favorite songs. It is a cover song. I don't really want to tell the title because there are certain artists out there that tend to copycat me, and that is unfortunate. So I'd rather not say the title of a song I am covering, but it was one of Brian's favorite songs. And I've decided to do this song. I've always loved the song myself and thought that I could do my own take on it. And I went into the recording studio a little bit ago and tried to lay my first vocal down, my reference vocal, and that's when I broke. I emotionally just started crying, and it was just very too hard for me to do at that moment, and I have to go in and relay the song. Because, you know, when you start crying, you use all your nasal passages, and it really messes with your whole voice and everything. But I think it's a good healing process for me. I'm using this in a positive way to use it as a healing method. And as I said, the music, and I hear him in the music, and I hear him directing me on how he would want the new album to progress.
Wow. Yes, I understand. And the whole thing about our marriage status in this country, that I think nobody ever uses this word, but the real issue seems to be kinship. Marriage is much more than a legal contract, although just being able to sign a document, it solves over 1,200 problems. It gives you 1,200 rights just by signing a marriage license. And this thing about civil unions, it doesn't even approach that. You can do one or two things through an attorney or keep going back and forth to attorneys. But the whole thing seems to be a battle against who our kin people are.
It's really a very sad situation in the United States because they don't honor gay marriages. And I found out the hard way. I basically was left in a situation that was very, very bad when Brian died. As I said, he was my manager. He was also the head of A&R at my record company. And his family made it very, very difficult on me, and still do to this day. They tried to take my apartment away, which I own. Thank God my name was on the lease. They wanted to take all rights to my music catalog. Well, that's kind of a joke because I work with so many producers and co-writers, and we're all registered with, like, ASCAP, BMI, Harry Fox, or publishing companies, and all of our work is protected, especially through the record companies. And to me, that was just harassment. Right when I was majorly grieving, I was told this at the funeral as I was over his body. And the family didn't really even seem to care that they lost their eldest son. They were more worried about what they could ascertain than the loss of their child, which seemed very horrific to me.
Me too.
It's just a very, very, very sad situation. I wish that the rights were different in this country. And I think with the upcoming election, that is something that we really need to do as gay people, is to see what those candidates are really going to do. And I, you know, I hear stuff about what the candidates are saying, but I also know behind them that maybe they're bluffing just to get the vote, because I don't think change is happening quick enough. And I see things like this happening to me. And I know if it's happening to me, there's other people out there. So the one thing I can say to other people is protect yourself before anything happens. Even if you're very young, if you're in a relationship, protect yourself. Get your papers in order, because anything can happen at a moment's notice. You don't realize that something can happen. I know it's a difficult subject to talk about. It's very uncomfortable. You don't want to think about dying, especially at my age. I could never even imagine a man dying at age 41. That just was not a concept. I know that he had heart problems, but the worst in all possible scenarios that I thought that could happen would be the worst, okay, would be maybe open-heart surgery, and then he would have to go through a recovery process. But I never thought he would just instantly die on me. And that's what's so sad. And if the one thing I can say is, everybody, get your papers in order. Make sure that it's all gone through the law. It's all notarized. So if something happens, you're well-protected, your finances are protected, you know where you stand. It doesn't help with, like, the emotional feelings you're going to feel, but it will help in your financial and your business dealing.
Well, Ernest, thank you for sharing that, and I'll be very direct with you. We have done a number of news stories on this show regarding what happens when a partner dies, and anything from the house people trying to take the house. I've not heard of anyone trying to take your music too. That's insult added to injury, trying to take everything. It's almost as if some families not only don't want you to have anything, they want to destroy you all. And so I followed that line because you know, one of the things this program does is it gives many of our straight listeners a glimpse into what it's like to be a gay person, because certainly they don't know that from television. Certainly they don't know it.
That's very true. And you know, I tell you that I'm very sympathetic to you losing your partner, and I'm sure that you can understand what I'm about to say, and I think you're accurate on what you just said. I think they were trying to blame me for his death for some reason. I've talked about this with many of my dear friends, and we've tried to understand their behavior, because it was just so strange. And I think you're pretty accurate on what you said. It's very difficult. And if we can educate ourselves, that's the word. If we can educate ourselves and make sure that we are covered, and as I said, it's not going to help with the emotional part. Nothing's ever going to take away the pain or the grief, but at least it's going to put you in a better business situation.
Well, Ernest, that has gone a long way toward giving a real feeling to that. You could do news articles and tell stories like this, but until someone has heard it from someone directly in real time, which is what you just did, which was a very powerful and gracious thing for you to do, You are helping us to do what one of our missions is here at the Head On Radio Network for this show anyway, and that is to break down the stereotypes. And because until we all know each other, we will never be able to. You know exactly where I'm headed. Thank you for doing that, and I'm sorry to drag you through that. But there was a method to my madness. I thank you for doing that. Only you. I'm sorry. Go ahead. If there's more, please. I didn't want to push you too far.
No, it's okay. I'm glad that you did, because if there's one thing I can do to help anybody not go through what I went through, I want them to hear my voice saying that moreover than hear me singing something, you know, out of a song, because that's more important to me to get this message across now, because maybe I had to learn the hard way, but it's an awful hard lesson to learn. As well, you must know, because you went through it. And as I said, I'm so sympathetic to your loss. I'm so, so sorry.
It was quite a few years ago, Ernest, but I will say you never get over it. The pain does, I know you don't believe this, but the pain does go away, but the person never does. I assure you.
I would like
say
to
that.
Believe that, but the pain is just so great sometimes.
I know. Trust me.
Out of nowhere, I just see something or hear something, and I just lose it. I don't know if it's now that I'm coming out of the shock period I was in, but all of a sudden there will just be one thing out of nowhere that will just remind me of a wonderful time that we were sharing together, and all of a sudden it's like, instant depression.
Well, and I understand, too. You never know what it's going to come from, either. It could just be someone's tone of voice or the glimpse of someone in a grocery store who reminds you of something that you did together one time.
You don't know where it's going to come from. I mean, strange as it may seem, you know. And my friends feel the same way, because we had such very, very close friends. In fact, two of our best friends, one of them is our dear friend Matthew Jarrett Harris, or Matt Karras as he's known in his professional name, who is one of my co-writers. He also sings backup on most of my records, has worked with me for about, over 20 years, was actually there the night I met Brian and told me that Brian was going to be my next lover, and I said, no.
That's funny. That's so funny. Reminds me that when Bill and I met, that was the circumstance. Someone pretty much said the same thing to me. What a funny coincidence. How funny is that?
Isn't that strange?
Tell me.
But I was like, no, Brian is not, you know. In fact, I was not looking for a relationship, because about a year before, I had been in a 3.5-year relationship with this guy who turned out to be a total creep. He had an affair on me with a guy, believe it or not, across the street while I was out on tour, and I ended up catching him, and the guy who he had an affair with, lover, came to me and asked me to beg my guy I was seeing at the time to stop seeing the other guy. I was like,
Lord,
are you talking about?
Such
and
drama.
I was like, go away, loser. You're over. And I just wanted no relationship. So when I met Brian, I was not in the market for, you know, looking for a marriage. I was just looking to just run my life. And so Brian, I actually put up a lot of walls with Brian, and he broke them all down. But he was so wonderful. I cannot say enough about this man. He was compassionate, he was caring, he was intelligent. If I could write a list of every single thing I would ever want in a person, it would have been in Brian.
Well, was Brian already in the music industry when you met him, or did you train him? How did that work?
Okay, this is a very interesting story. He had studied management and always wanted to be in music, and he always loved music. He had previously worked in the airlines. He had started as a flight attendant, and then he moved up to in-flight manager. And then, after we were together for a short period, he started going out on the road with me as my road manager. And from that, he slowly evolved into taking over my management, because I've always owned my own management company, and we basically did it together. And what we, the way it worked so beautifully was he did the business most of the time, and I did the creative. And so that's the way we balanced it. Yes, we would sit down and have our meetings. And a lot of the time, yes, it did get in the way. I mean, we could not sit down in a restaurant without business coming up at some point in that conversation.
Yeah, I understand.
But
I really do.
You know what? We enjoyed that. That was a, that was something that was a thing that was a common bond that we kept creating. That was the most beautiful thing. We weren't just being stagnant. We were consistently creating, trying to better our lives, trying to better our art, trying to make, whether it be the music better, the videos better, the shows different. I mean, he really revamped everything and made it workable and easy for me. Easy. Where before, it was very much a struggle.
That's a wonderful, wonderful thing to share with us. So it's difficult. It's more than difficult. It's a tragedy.
But that's
and
why
I'm glad
dedicating
you had
this new album that I am currently recording, which is entitled Eternally, which is a beautiful ballad that I've recorded already that will be on the album, which is produced by Tom Olton and Steve Skinner, and has been written by Morissette Martin and Doug House for me. And the word eternally is one of the words, it's meaning that my love for him will always be eternal, because I know it will be. I'll never be over this man. I'll always love him. And I hope that my music will always continue on eternally. And it's sort of like my growth to go onwards. I do know this about Brian. If I stopped working right now today, I would receive a kick in the butt from heaven, from him. I swear to you, after all the hard work, he would kick me from heaven. In fact, I can hear his voice sometimes telling me, do, that's the wrong decision, or yes, go with this thing. Even though it's really chancy, go with that decision.
What a wonderful partnership.
Now you're probably thinking, that's a little crazy, but you
not at all.
Your partner in the background.
Wow. That's great of you to share. And by the way, a friend of yours, Jay, VJC, is in the chat room and tells me to ask you what's up. By the way, if you'd like to come into chat, you're welcome to do so. You just stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll find a link there to chat. And I keep an eye on it, and we'll be glad to relay messages to
you. I love VJC's work. You should hear some of the wonderful medleys he's done of my work. He is so brilliant.
Wow. Well, maybe if we could get him to send us an MP3, we're already loaded for this evening with tracks. So, but we would love to run some of those. I had no idea who he was.
So great.
I had no idea. You just never know. About your song "Only You," I understand that song does not. I had not heard it before you did. Apparently, that is an old song though that you completely redid the energy levels of. And is it true that this was a folk song?
Yes, indeed it was. It was actually a folk ballad that was originally done in the very early '80s by a group called Yazoo that came out of England, which you probably know of, which had Alison Moyet, who went on to have a very successful solo career, and Vince Clark, who went into Erasure. And they had two albums out, and Only You was their first single on their first album, and it kind of became a cult classic. It was very much a love song, and some people know about it, but some people don't. But there's something about the words and the melody that are so beautiful, and it just transcribes so wonderfully into this dance anthem that we all heard. And everybody who worked on the record, from the previous version I did the current versions that I've done had the same feeling in their mind. It transcribed excellently, and it's just a beautifully written song. If you look at it, it is a folk song, and many folk songs transcribe beautifully into dance records or dance pop records.
I would have never thought of doing it that way, but you got a very good point, because many of them are so poignant. It's a great idea.
In fact, there's another one that I've done. I don't know if you know of it. It's called All I Know, and it originally was a ballad by Art Garfunkel, and nobody even realizes that it was like this folk ballad, and I totally took it and made it a trance dance anthem that soars.
Wow, because I know the song. I would have, and I've seen it listed amongst your work. I've just not heard you do it. You've made a dance track from All I Know. That's incredible.
Yes. And a lot of the very young people think it's an original song, but the older people know the original Art Garfunkel version, which was actually his first version when he left Simon and Garfunkel on his first album, Angel Claire.
I'll be darned. And I believe I had that
song as well.
Wow. Ernest, tell us where you're from and where you're living now. I think a lot of our listeners have no clue. I referred to the track we played as being a United Kingdom extended mix, and they may think you're in England.
Well, no, I'm originally American. I was born in a very, very small town way upstate New York, which is way in the boonies, called Norwich, New York. And I only lived there a very short time because I started working very young as a child actor. And I live in New York City, right in the heart of New York City, right in Manhattan, Midtown Manhattan, right in the Lincoln Center area. And as I said, I came here very young. My first job was Jerome in South Pacific at age 7 in the national tour with Jane Powell and Howard Keel.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a really great gig to get at that young of age, especially to be in such a big, brilliant productions as such as that, to learn to do such great work. That's how I started training, was at that age. And from that, I went on to do Kiss Me, Kate, and Little Jake, and Annie, Get Your Gun, and then into Camelot. And then I had to go to school for a while. And after that, I did the national tour of Godspell. Had to go to school for some more after that, and then I attended the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. And right the day after I graduated the American Musical and Dramatic Academy, I went into the original production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, creating the role of Dan.
Amazing. Well, you were obviously then, you're mentioning titles like South Pacific. That's Broadway. You were actually in the heart of it.
Uh-huh. Oh, I've done lots and lots of musicals. I mean, the list is very long. Broadway, stock, tours. I mean, I've done many, many shows here. Carousel, Cabaret, Rocky Horror Show. The list is endless. And they're very different types of shows. I mean, look at the difference between Carousel, which is your classic Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, to a show like the Rocky Horror Show, which is the total, you know, wild, crazy rock musical, which is so much fun.
That's amazing to me. So at 7 years old, you were on Broadway in South Pacific, and eventually you wound your way to Rocky Horror.
Sure.
Wow. You've got to tell us, I know everybody wants to know, what character did you play in Rocky Horror? We have to know this. It can't be put down.
I played Dr. Frankenfurter.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And I loved it. It was so, so much fun. The only thing I have to say I hated about it were those shoes. They were so painful.
But they look so fabulous.
Because that's so, you have to run basically the whole second part of the show. Like, down platforms, you're jumping. It's like, and imagine that in, you know, these huge, huge platform spike heels. I mean, every night, my poor Tootsies.
It's just amazing. We, of course, so many of us have a soft spot in our heart for that. We often get into chat rooms, some weird discussions, and singing. We call it singing. It might as well be. We all hear it in our heads. We type lyrics. That's just amazing. How did you transition from Broadway to the music industry?
Well, I was doing, right after I did the musical version of Rocky Horror Show, I did the Rocky Horror Disco Show. And Grace Jones's managers came to see me in it, and she was at that time handled by Berlin Carmen Management. And John Carmen, who was part of the management team, who was also a brilliant publicist, came to see the show and came backstage and grabbed me and said, "I want to sign you. You are going to be a star. Just meet me in my office tomorrow." I was like, "Whoa, who are you? Okay." And I went in for a meeting, and it took off. He then got me to Bobby Orlando, who had huge amounts of hits in the early 80s.
Bobby Orlando? Yeah, yes.
Bobby O, okay?
Yes,
And
yes.
What ended up happening was, it's a very strange story, I was actually in high school at this point. I started doing vocals for what I thought was to be my album for CBS, okay? Blue Sky CBS Records. And what happened was, he took my vocals and put his name on them.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty low.
Yeah, it was. So we got out of the contract, and right after I got out of that contract, I had started working on a project with my current co-producer, who I've worked with for over 20 years, the brilliant, the very brilliant, Steve Skinner. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Well, I'm familiar with several of the names. That name, I know of, because I've seen it around, but I know Moulton goes back.
Steve Skinner was the musical arranger and the album producer for the Broadway musical Rent, which won a Pulitzer. They were up for a Grammy, a Tony. I mean, they won the Tony Award. And he has arranged and produced many of that Midler's records, Taylor Dane, Chaka Khan. I mean, the list that he has worked with is just amazing. And I'm very honored to have been working with him for so many years. He's fantastic. And the next single, he just turned in his mix on. I'm totally blown away. Totally and completely blown away by his mix. It is so excellent. As with everybody who has turned in their mix on this next single, they're amazing. I just think I'm thanking God for these people, because they're wonderful. They're absolutely fresh, new, invigorating, and wonderful. I can't say anything bad about them at all.
Now, this mix you're talking about, is this Live Like You Are Dying, which will be coming out on the new?
This is the next single. We're already working on the next single and the next album. Because the next single, currently we have out To Save the Love 207, which Steve has a brilliant, brilliant mix on that, which he co-wrote and co-produced the original version as well as this version. The original version came out in 1989 and went to number one and knocked Donna Summer off the top of the charts. And I won, you know, in 1990, the Best Male Vocalist of the Year Award. That was part of the deal that I did with Brian. I wanted to redo To Save the Love because we had so many requests for it, and it is one of my favorite pieces in my catalog. And it was co-written by my co-writer, Daryl Carpenter, who we unfortunately lost to AIDS. So it's being dedicated in memorial tribute to both Brian and Daryl. And,
wow.
Yeah, it's a really special piece. I mean, To Save the Love is one of the most brilliant songs that I think I've worked on in my career coming up so far, one of them. And there's also a brilliant video that has gone along with it, which uses footage that was shot by Scott McCullough, who I've done many, many videos with. He's mostly famous for his Gap ads, of which he's won whatever that award is for Commercial of the Year, and some pieces that were shot by Jack Pedota, who actually did all the posters for Batman Returns, you know, like the Michelle Pfeiffer Catwoman posters.
Yes.
And it's a great video because it's very documentary-like, like a Truth or Dare, and it starts in 1989, and we actually used outtake footage that I've never released before, and we brought it right up till to today. So you can kind of see my progression, and this was during basically the time I was with Brian. So it was a very nice way to do a dedication, because I had to take a little time off after losing Brian to get myself together, and this was a good way to reintroduce it. And I'm so thankful that this song is, you know, a number one smash. The video is a number one smash. It just touches my heart. It makes it just worthwhile that people appreciate it and love the song. And the fact that
Feels
Like You Were Dying is now hot on its heels and is blowing up, that I'm very thankful for.
Well, we're thankful for you, Ernest. And I want to point out to the listeners, we have a copy of To Save the Love 2007, the Steve Skinner Big Family Club Mix. If you'll allow us to, we'd love to play it.
Oh, I love that.
And how did it come to be named the Big Family Club Mix? That's a
great question. Because Steve now has a big family. Steve, as you said earlier, I don't only have a gay audience, which I'm very thankful for. I have a huge gay market. But I started so young, I have a huge straight market. Because when I first came out, they said to me, you're not allowed to tell anybody you're gay. Well, I didn't get that one, actually, because, you know, I'm a little flamboyant, but or glam, whatever you want to call it, a fashion forward. But I didn't realize it was the 80s, so everybody was that way. So they kind of took it for what it was. I was a musician, so they didn't really care. So anyways, Steve has two wonderful sons and a lovely daughter and a lovely wife, and that's what he created his title. I let all my remixers name their own mixes.
That's a story. I would have expected, for instance, in Portland, Oregon, there was a club called the Family Zoo. I thought it would have been the name of a club. This just blows me away because he has a big family.
Well, also, I think he also intended... Now, I could be taking a liberty on saying this one, and I might get an email or a phone call later this evening on this one. I think he also wanted everybody to be united in their feelings of when they hear the song, because one thing he said, he wanted to hear everybody happy and dancing on the dance floor together to this record. And he wanted to hear it, you know, everywhere being played. So he worked very, very hard on this record.
Wonderful.
And
we have it all
so
queued up.
Pleased with this work.
Wonderful. We have it all queued up for the listeners. And when we come back, I'll be providing the toll-free numbers and the other numbers to the listeners. And then if anyone would like to call in, you are welcome to do so. And so I'll just have the studio run it. It's To Save the Love 2007, the Steve Skinner's Big Family Club Mix.
but let me fail to trust his absence.
I was the first act to open WKTU's Beatstock ever. So that I can hold as a history point in my career.
I didn't know that.
And it was so thrilling to look out at those thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Couldn't even see the end of the crowd. And the cheers coming back in waves when I was singing Sooner or Later, especially the point when I take off my jacket and... Well, my dancers rip off my jacket, actually, as it happens.
Okay.
And the scream just seemed to go in like waves, like a tsunami coming at me. And it was like, it was overwhelming. And that was such a, just a wonderful feeling. And that
right,
was a definite
euphoric,
great crowd.
You feel euphoric, right? Euphoric.
I live for it. I just love it. And, you know, again, I just hope change happens this coming year. And if I can be a part of that change. And that's why I love the fact that there are, you know, the companies like Promo Only that put our videos out there, Rock America, Screenplay. We have to say yes, thank you to these people because they are allowing our videos, our music to be heard. You know, I'm on the same reels with Madonna, with Gwen Stefani, with Justin Timberlake. We're all right in a row together. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't understand that. If MTV is out there, why don't they play more videos? I mean, obviously, you turn on MTV, it's more like...
Well, that's changing, too. I was on the phone today with MTV, and they may be adding the Save the Love video. So let's cross our fingers, cross our toes, cross our eyes, and pray, because that would be a great honor.
Right. The problem is also, I noticed that with a lot of videos, they don't... It's too much R&B. There's nothing wrong with R&B and the rap videos, but they don't bring a lot of this dance music out on videos. It's just
right.
Very nice.
Unfortunately, it is that way in this country. MTV has played my previous videos, like Follow Your Heart was huge on MTV. MTV Europe is another whole story. They just play everything if it's good or bad. They judge it on the quality of the music. And the video.
Exactly what I'm trying to do on Disco 93.5 is not, it's just playing the music and let people judge for themselves. What, you know, you got to have an open mind to listen to Disco 93.5.
Exactly.
If you want to listen to the same stuff, then you got to go somewhere else because that's not what I'm about. I'm about, like you, artists like you, just play the music. Just play the music. You never know what someone's going to, you know, turn on to that.
Right, and what's very interesting is I'll go to a certain country and really don't know that much about the country and realize I'm being thought of as a pop star there. And it's
strange. You have to go out of the country to be discovered, and then when you're in your own country, you can't even, because people don't understand it because it's the big corporations that they think it's you know, it's the capitalism. It's just, everything is about the money.
It is, and I'm on a major label, you know?
I'm not on any little small dinky label.
I'm on a major label. Sony... It's a major distributor here.
Sure. Yeah, I saw the label you're on. And it's like it's I'm befuddled. I can't understand what's going on. And well, what's going on is what I just said. It's about the you know.
Well,
I have to say
they've done a wonderful job marketing my hits album. It won best greatest hits album of the year, and you know it was number one at Tower. Unfortunately, Tower Records went under, but. Times are changing. It's just taking too slow. That's the problem. We got to speed it up.
Yeah, something happened to the music or whatever happened here in New York. It's just there's no oomph in radio anymore. It's just blasé. It's stale.
Why we have to take a stand and make it happen. And
I'm so small you can't even see me because I'm internet radio, and what happens with my station is. It goes through the computer, so you can't take computer with you. You can't put it in the car. You can't take it. You can take it to the job, but if a lot of these jobs don't allow streaming, so it's impossible. A lot of this stuff, so you have to pre-record a lot of this stuff, and it's impossible. So I mean, I'm very very small. I'm not huge. You know, I'm trying to do the best I can to push artists like you and other artists. But you know,
I'm very grateful.
I'm so thankful
for you being.
Well,
and for you, Peter, you know, you're out there giving a chance to listeners that might not have ever heard of me.
Well, it's my pleasure, honestly. This is I've always loved this type of music, and it goes back a long way. And I, I've played it, and I've loved it for many, many years. We had a guest recently, Alex Natipkin, who explained to us the whole beginning of the disco suck. Yeah, he was great. And
The whole
anti-disco thing, the disco sucks bumper sticker. Yes,
That whole thing, as I think back on it now, I was very young, but it was seen to me as being just really horrific. Why is there not a chance for every type of music to exist? I mean, from R&B to soul to country to dance to pop. Why, if you like a certain type, why would you try to destroy somebody else's taste?
Well, Alex explained to us that it had its beginnings at a Chicago sports event. It was one of those burn the record sort of thing. It was really a backlash against gay people and club. Yeah, and it turned into a young, I guess primarily sports fans, bashing against the gays, black, anybody that went to discos. The whole thing got started then, and consequently, since there was nobody really to stand up against them, the media was presenting them only, and most of us were so closeted during those days. Everybody believes that disco sucks. In fact, I had one of our listeners say just the other evening, he was born I believe he said this late 70s or the 80s, and when he came along, that was what everybody said, and so he just believed it. I mean, as our friend Glenn Rivera says, there's a time for this music to live again. And that time is now.
And you know what? I actually work with the creator of disco, who was Tom Moulton. He created the first 12-inch record. Before that, they had to put two 45s together to make the record longer. And it's saddening to hear what you're saying, because there is such a life in dance music now.
Well, Alex is from Europe, and he explained that over in Europe, people were playing the music and dancing in clubs. The whole disco sucks thing didn't happen there. So when he came here to the United States, when he moved here, he would go into record stores and ask where the disco was, and he was using the word disco as if there was nothing wrong with it, which there isn't. But people would like look at him funny, and finally, somebody said, "Well, look, that's really not supposed to ask," because basically, it's all sprang from that sports event, burning the records.
Such a shame.
It is, really. And, Tom Moulton, he goes back with me. I remember the first Moulton 12-inch I'm aware of was Do or Die by Grace Jones. Was that the first 12-inch?
No, the first one, but it's funny that you mentioned Do or Die. I can't talk about it right now. But anyways, I love that song. I'll just say that much.
Okay.
The first 12-inch... was actually, I believe, 10% by Double Exposure.
I'll be darned. What a history.
It wasn't 10%, it was My Love Is Free, and I should know this because of Tom, and I know he's going to yell at me for this one, but I'm pretty sure it's 10% by Double Exposure.
Well, I'm finding out.
Earlier, I think it's some earlier stuff, like BT Express, Al Downing, Eddie Kendrick, stuff like that, I think. I'm not sure.
Well,
I could be wrong.
Very glad to hear that Moulton is still working. And I mean, you just don't know what becomes of the people. You don't find out about it in the press. It's a shame, really.
Oh, he's working, and he's fabulous. He's wonderful.
Great news. And also,
he did a mix on To Save the Love with Julian Marsh that's quite brilliant.
Very good. VJC, I would like, I'm not kicking you off, I'm just, but
yeah.
you can stay with us as long as you like, but I just wanted to tell you that please drop me an email to peter@headonradionetwork.com and include a link to your streaming station. I'd like to put it on the Strictly Confidential radio site.
Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to include that link. It's all about getting the music out, and I really, which is what Glenn says, and it's what I say. And I'm just thrilled to hear that's what you say, too.
Okay.
And
I
totally agree. It's all about the music. And it's the one thing that is keeping me going right now.
Okay.
Totally.
So let me go. I know this is about Ernest and not about me. So maybe one time, maybe I can get hooked up and you can probably interview me for a show.
Well, yes, I would absolutely love to, and I would like to do that with this month. There's
okay,
still plenty
well,
of time.
You know, I'll drop you the email. Ernest,
yes.
I'll talk to you.
Oh,
you know,
great.
Keep,
and I still want to hear the next medley. You promise?
Yeah. Okay, guys.
I'm going to hold you to it, guy.
Okay, and a big shout-out to Glenn. Glenn, thanks a lot. All right? Okay, Peter, I will be emailing you.
Thank you,
okay,
sir.
PJ,
nice
I'll
to have you on the show.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thank you, VJC, in New York from Disco 93.5. And we have caller Jim on the line. Welcome to Strictly Confidential, Jim.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
I'm well.
I'm well.
First, I would like to say, it's, you know, when people burn books or records, often people are burned as well. But I would like to say something to you both. To, in my own simple way, to honor your sense of loss. And this is just a quotation from a Russian poet who said, and this is from Eugene Onegin, and he says, "The two of us that plan to wander on foreign shores to feast our eyes, but I am here at his yonder. Fate has decreed it otherwise."
That's a beautiful sentiment, Jim. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you so much.
Very kind of
you.
You're
certainly welcome. That was written by Alexander Pushkin, the Lord Byron of Russia, over 170 years ago.
Wow. What a quote.
I agree.
I'm taken back. I'm sorry.
I share your sense of loss in more ways than you'll ever know.
Thank you for that so much.
God bless you both. Good night, gentlemen.
And thank you for calling. That
yes,
was our listener, Jim. And Jim comes to us from an undisclosed location on the East Coast. We always enjoy Jim. He sometimes tells us insane stories, and he can be quite serious also. Jim is a man of many faces and with a huge knowledge base. He's been around the block with a lot of us. In a lot of ways. And Ernest, you mentioned Sooner or Later, and I'd love to play that. You're telling the story about people going wild and people tearing your shirt off. It just sounds like, I mean, everybody's got to hear the song. They've got to hear the cover. tell us a little
Sooner
bit about how you chose
it. The record that sort of I consider put me on the map worldwide as like a pop star, and it happened so young. It was just the right record at the right time, and it's been remixed so many times, and it's just such a happy song. I think that's why people love it. It makes you feel good, and that's the reason.
It is a wonderful song. And before we run it, though, I don't want to forget this. You were both talking about the music industry and the difficulty of getting music played, this sort of thing. What would you say to a gay person, let's say a young gay person who's breaking into the music business or trying to, with your history, what advice would you give them?
To be honest, to be true to themselves, and do not hurt anybody else, and keep going, no matter what. No matter how much adversity you will face, and I'm telling you, you will face adversity. Believe in your craft. Believe in your music. But the most important thing I would say, which I have had to fall back on, is to study your craft. Because without studying, you're going to be nowhere if you get tired, if something happens. There's times where you have to rely on your voice in different manners because of certain situations. And if you haven't trained your voice properly, you're not going to be able to use your voice. The other thing is acting. If you have not been trained acting, you're not going to be able to communicate the lyrics. You must be able to have people understand what you're saying to them. And the other thing is to be able to execute choreography, you must study dance and movement. And I also think it's important that you do study fashion and design, because without the two, music and fashion and design walk hand in hand. And that's how it all sort of comes about. I say study, learn, but believe. And if you're not completely sure, don't bother, because you're only going to be hurt. You're only going to be wasting your own time. And maybe there's other avenues in the business that you could be doing that would make you happier than to try to be an artist and to just try to please your ego. Because a lot of the times it's not about pleasing my ego. Like right now, I'm doing it because of the sheer joy of doing this. And yes, maybe this is a healing process of me, for me to go through, to get through Brian. But I've been doing this all my life, and it's the one thing in my life I find is my pure pleasure and joy is my music. And for all of my career, I love acting, I love singing, I love dancing. I'm more at home on stage than I am in real life, as strange as that may sound. But if anything I can tell a young artist, you gotta keep going, because it's going to be hard. But who knows? It might not happen the first year. I never expected to be... Well, I did expect. I won't lie to you. I knew that once I started into it... at age 7, I tasted blood when I was doing South Pacific like a vampire, and I was...
Wow.
You know, and I'm just so thankful and grateful that I can say, you know, 30 years later, I'm still cranking it out, and I'm still working. How many people get that chance? Not many. Not many at all. And I'm very thankful to be on the charts with not one, but two records today.
Wow. That's a great story. And one other point I want to ask before I forget it and before we run sooner or later is, we talked about, our, you and VJC spoke about the record industry. We talked about major labels. Tell me about your you must be on foreign labels too. If you're all over Europe, then you must record on other labels than we're accustomed to seeing.
Oh,
what
yeah,
are those
I'm on
like?
Labels. I think in every continent. I can't think of one that I've not been on. I'm not one. Oh my! Everywhere they license me. It's absolutely brilliant. And with the internet age, it's even broadened further. Ernest Cole is everywhere.
Well, thank God for that. Do you encounter the same resistance from DJs and radio stations in other countries about playing this music?
It's interesting enough that in other countries, it seems to be a little bit easier than the States. Although I'm very successful here and I'm very thankful, but in other countries, it's a little bit easier. I don't know if it's because I'm an American and I'm going there, or, but they seem to, they embrace the music quicker and faster, and it's just easier for some reason. I don't understand the reason, and I really don't have an answer for that question.
Thank you for that. It sort of makes sense. It falls in line with the other input I've had here from Alex and from VJC, from you, from Glenn. It's just easier elsewhere, and even in terms of gay marriage, just a short list of countries.
It's weird, like in certain countries, I can't get it. I have to have security to get out of the hotel. I'm that much of a pop star. It's weird.
Wow, that is strange. Did you come here?
In fact, my dancers have been in situations that they have been scared. When people have been shaking the car, the limo, we've been in some scary situations.
I should say so. Well, in countries like Denmark and Norway and Sweden, Iceland, even Spain, Belgium, that's just a very short list.
You know what also is interesting? Is I have producers right now in those countries that are working on this new album. In Denmark, Dean Ehrlich is with Carl Cox, are laying tracks right this very minute. In Barcelona, Paul Goodyear just remixed my next single. I'm everywhere.
Wow.
I mean, this next album has everywhere from Singapore to Japan to Australia to the United Kingdom to Italy to Spain to France to Denmark to the United States to Canada. Everywhere. It's really quite a global album. It's universal, this album, and it's a double album, much like the old Donna Summer album. So we're really giving you the full 12-inch mixes, not
wow.
Little radio edits, but People yes. want to hear the full record.
Excellent. That's wonderful. Let's go ahead and run Sooner or Later then. And what year is this, was this recorded? I have the extended club mix.
The original Sooner or Later was recorded, I believe, in 1986 or 85 and came out in 86 and was continued on the charts all the way through 88 and then has been remixed about 20 times. And the last time it came out was on the Hits album and, you know, did very well and went number one again.
Great. Let's run that then. It's Sooner or Later.
And I think you have the remix.
Club.
Is that correct?
Yes, extended club mix, it says.
That would be the remix.
Okay. That's the one then from the from around the 2005 then?
Correct.
Okay, excellent. Okay. Sooner or Later, Ernest Cole. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Strictly Confidential. Our guest this evening is Ernest Cole. The track you just heard was Sooner or Later, the extended club mix by Ernest Cole. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head on, or you can use 304-658-3333. Ernest, we had Cynthia Manley on a while back who told us a funny story about Grace Jones, and Grace come up several times during our conversation this evening. I was wondering if you might have a Grace Jones story.
Oh, I have a lot of them, actually.
Well, let's hear the most scandalous one.
I think one of my most famous memories of Darling Grace was when we were playing the Millennium Festival together in Washington, D.C., and it was right on the Capitol steps, and we were told to all report at a certain time, you know, well in advance of our performance. And they had, you know, movie trailers that were like set up like dressing rooms for all of us, but we all had to share. And then they had like outside tents with like refreshments in them. But basically we had to sit outside. And the performers were Martha Wash, Christine W., myself, and then Grace. Well, Grace showed up very, very untimely, and there was a schedule, you know, for the whole event, because it was an outdoor event, and they had to get police permits and the whole thing. Well, she did not want to go on until the sun went down, which was beyond the time of the actual permit, and so she kept us all waiting. Now, we showed up at around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, expecting to go on at around 3 o'clock. Now, if anybody's ever seen one of my concerts, it's extremely costumed. It's extremely, the dancers and I are in very heavy stage makeup, especially if you're performing in front of thousands and thousands of people. My dancers wear huge extensions and wigs and pieces on their heads, and the huge costuming that is involved in the whole event. And it's very uncomfortable. When you're ready to go on, you're all warmed up, you're ready, you just want to get on stage and give it to them, because your energy level's up and you're all excited as well. Well, we were left to wait 4 hours in 100-degree weather outside to go on.
Wow.
Me and Miss Martha Wash were sitting there sweating to death. And I'm sure you know who Martha Wash is. She sang Raining Men with one of the original Weather Girls. And it was just one of the most uncomfortable experiences. And finally, the promoters went in to say, you have got to go on. You know, this is getting to be a police issue here. We've got the crowd all riled up. Well, we look over, and the trailer is shaking.
Uh-huh. What was Miss Jones up to?
Grace was having a little bit of... She was not agreeing with them, let's just say. But, you know, she finally came on, and she gave a brilliant performance. So what can you say?
She was having a tantrum then in the trailer.
Say again?
She was having a tantrum. She was having a fit in the trailer about...
Well, I couldn't see what was going on. Me and Martha could just see the trailer shaking. And for a trailer to shake, something had to be going on.
Well, that's an interesting story. Cynthia Manley shared with us.
You know, it's interesting because I've worked with Cynthia a couple times. We worked together at the High Energy Music Awards, and then we did Long Beach Pride together. She's a lovely lady.
Yes, she is. She was a delightful guest. She's probably told you this her story that about Grace Jones.
No, she didn't, because I don't know, we had too much to talk about ourselves.
Well, you both had a close encounter of the Grace Jones kind. Her encounter happened backstage, and I honestly don't remember where. She's in our audio archives. Grace was with us. I'm sorry, Cynthia was with us during the month of July, if someone would like to go back and listen to that show. But apparently they came to blows. Apparently Cynthia ended up shoving her, or Grace shoved her. It ended up, I think they eventually made peace, but Grace Jones she's got a lot of attitude, apparently. A lot of control issues.
Unfortunately, I think I got to be careful of what I say.
Sure you do.
I would rather generalize this and say artists should watch what they do and how they treat each other, because it really reflects on them as artists. And sometimes that holds you back in the business.
Well, production chat has just reminded me the argument was over a dressing room. Apparently, Grace Jones had taken over Cynthia's dressing room. I think it's what.
Oh,
yes. Production chat never forgets. They reminded me what the story was. We're at 10:48, and I'm not rushing you off, but there's something I really want to ask about you regarding a new manager. Your new manager is Elliot. Is that? Can you tell us
Elliot
about
Elliot Sokolov? Elliot S, as he's well known, is one of my brilliant new co-producers that is working on this album. He is absolutely fantastic, and we are creating new work together. And we've been working together for about a year. The first record we started doing together was Live Like You Were Dying. He came in to remix it. Julian Marsh was the executive producer on that record. It was my first record back in front of the mic after I lost Brian, which is a very difficult record to do because I have a Polaroid for every single lyric I sing in that song about losing Brian and finding the body and the whole situation. It was very, very difficult. But doing the song was very healing for me in that fashion, of the real shock value of that horrific scene. But Elliot came in and absolutely created a brilliant mix on it. And what I think is so brilliant about it, it sounds like records they don't make anymore. It sounds like, well, almost like an old Casablanca record. And one thing that I think is so brilliant about his work is his fantastic guitar work. He is such a brilliant, brilliant guitarist, and very few people know this about him. And on this upcoming album, you're really going to hear some amazing stuff from Elliot S. He's a force to be reckoned with, and he's so great to work with. I can't even tell you how it just—he's like Steve Skinner or Tom Moulton, or let me name some of the other producers on this album: Julian Marsh, Neil Christian, Mike Kopeck, and Tony Spalding from Almighty UK. Of course, Elliot, who I can't say enough good about, LG5, the brilliant Giuseppe D, Stephen L. Freeman, who we all know from his work with Donna Summer, Carl Cox and Peter Wilson. Dave Ford is on the project, who did all the Rick Astley records, Kylie Minogue and Bananarama. We
wow.
also have, as I said, Peter Wilson and Chris Richard from Australia, the Energy Project from Singapore, Paul Goodyear from UK and the and Barcelona. The Perry twins are on it, and of course the great Tom Moulton.
Wow. Well, you know, Elliot is going to be joining us next week. Elliot will be our guest this coming Tuesday. I'm going to have to make him fess up about the guitar stuff.
Say again? I can
Elliot,
hear less.
Oh, the last comment was I'm going to have to make him fess up regarding his guitar artistry.
He's so brilliant. Out of nowhere, he'll just do it. I mean, that's what a real musician is like. I mean, he and Steve can just do it on a dime, you know, and they can comprehend when I just say one thing, they go, gotcha, and they do it.
Ernest, go ahead. I want to ask you some about buying your music, too, about where people can find
it.
But go ahead and
finish. I just want to say that they are so great and easy to work with. They are fantastic. They make it a pleasure to do this music.
Amazing. I'm looking forward to having him. He has sent a few tracks, and I've had time to listen to some of them, and they're
right.
from all over the map. The man does all sorts of things.
Oh, indeed. Film, commercials. He's just brilliant. And, you know, he's helping with the working with me in a lot of different fashions with my company. You know, I'm still holding on finding a new manager because it's so difficult. I mean, Brian was my husband and my manager, so we're kind of keeping a team together doing this right now. So that's what I'm doing until I can find the exact right person to completely have handle me. It's too hard because, you know, he was my husband who I lost.
Because he was so many things that it's almost impossible to unravel it from your business life. It had to be devastating. There's no question
totally.
About that. Where can people locate your music? I'm so sorry we didn't get to we didn't get to live like you were dying. We're going to have you back again. This is fairly obvious because I haven't covered half the things I want to talk to you about. But where can people find you?
Oh, darn. Well, you can get my music almost anywhere. If you want to download it, you can go right to iTunes right now and download it. Amazon, any major record store, even CD Baby. But the quickest way is or www.theoutclub.com. And if you want really quick updates on me, go to my MySpace page, www.myspace.com/ErnestKohl, ErnestKohl, because we are constantly doing daily updates on what I'm doing. And I want to give a shout-out to my fantastic webmaster, Loco of Wild Minx Productions in Australia. He's so wonderful. I enjoy working with him so much. I just want to thank my whole team and my fans and the DJs and everybody out there and you, Peter. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And I want to tell you that we are blogging the information about your sites. Also, your site has been listed in the music section of strictlyconfidentialradio.com. So you can always find you that way. One last thing to talk about is about benefit concerts. Apparently you're involved with both the American Heart Association and AIDS benefits. Are you talking
totally,
about...
I believe so strongly in both of those. Those are very dear to my heart because, as I said, losing Brian to a heart attack, losing so many of my dear friends and co-workers to AIDS, crushes me deeply, and I really stand strong on helping people who are infected with the disease. Let's not let them die. Let's let them live it. Let's give them a life that they can be healthy and happy in. Don't let them die homeless or hungry. Help people. If you've got a gift of a talent, get out there and use it and give it to people. You know, use your talent to give something back to the world that you've gotten so much from. Then you're really doing something.
I agree. There's so many things I wanted to ask. We're running out of time, but I'm going to fit in as many as I can. The To Save the Love video, that Brian, you say, is at the end of that video. Is that on YouTube? Can
yes,
we find it?
Yes, it is. That's a very, very bittersweet moment for me to watch. That was taken out at a concert at, I believe, at Cheetah in New York City. He was escorting my dancers. Sometimes I enter from a different place than my dancers because we trick the audience a lot of times visually in my entrance into the show. My dancers will come in one way and I'll come out of another place, whether it be the ceiling, the floor, whatever. And he was escorting my dancers out, and you can actually see him come out at the very end and the door closes, and it's like saying goodbye.
Oh my, that's got to tear your heart out. Can we find that video on YouTube?
It was going to be posted on YouTube by one of my remixers, from Modulation, and but right now it is currently on my MySpace page.
Oh.
And I was speaking with some people at MTV today, and they are considering it, adding it on. So maybe you want to give the people over at Logo a call at MTV and say, hey, play the new Ernest Cole To Save the Love 207 video.
Ah, that's something I could certainly do. I'm on the phone half the day anyway. Another question I need to slip in quickly is, you say you've played in front of a lot of straight crowds. I assume that that's been mostly in Europe because of the music prejudices that are over here?
Actually, both. I would say the first 10 years of my existence in America was straight. I, for some reason, the girls loved me.
Well, I can't imagine why, Ernest. The fact
and,
you're gorgeous.
You know, the straight men aren't threatened by me. So, you know what? If it ain't a problem, why fix it?
Oh, that's so funny. That's
and you know
a great
what?
Story.
The gay guys love me too. So what more could I ask for?
Yeah, I mean, it's win-win all over the map.
I mean,
Ernest,
I was talking with your producer, Agnes, at the top of the show, and she was saying she has an infant that was dancing to my track, and I said, well, that's an increase of my demographic. My record company was telling me that I usually go from about age 13 to, we've actually traced it to like people in their 60s or up to 70 liking my music.